Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
And welcome to Schooled with a Professor. We're going to stay on the West Coast and kind of keep you updated on this National Football League, which we're now into week four. And it's such a different type of league. And joining us from the SB Nation, my buddy Bill Williamson. And so, Bill, it's like, here in Seattle, and I'm sure probably in the same place down in Vegas and maybe to a certain degree with the Rams, all the West Coast teams and all the teams in the league, people are complaining about their defense. They want their defensive coordinators fired. They want their starters benched. It's like, have people not understood that this year we are seeing some of the craziest offensive numbers we've seen? And I know Andrew Siciliano put this out this week that we've seen now since the 1961 AFL with scoring, yardage, passing, everything else.
Yeah, I mean, it's something had to give, right? I think we thought we were going to see a lot of sloppy football play on both sides, but it's more on the defense, like you said, and it makes sense. And John, when do you think it's going to start to even out a little bit? Maybe week five, six? Does it ever even out?
I don't think it's going to. I mean, the defenses will catch up to a certain degree, but and again, you have the fortune of covering two teams, one in the AFC, one in the NFC. You cover the Rams and you cover the Vegas Raiders, and so in the NFC, I think it's going to continue all year. And the reason I say that is that you've got 12 quarterbacks making $21 million or more. Now you have Nick Foles replacing Mitch Trubisky. So in the NFC, there's very few breaks. And of course, I mean, Seattle and the NFC West teams, they get the advantage of taking advantage of that because, they've got the young quarterbacks in the AFC East and the NFC East where all the other divisions don't. And so, you look in Seattle, of course, they're ready to carve up anybody on the defensive side, but you've got, the Packers giving up 28.3 points a game. You've got Dallas giving up 29 points a game. I mean, it's amazing to think right now that, in the NFC, I don't think it's going to lighten up. I think right now the quarterbacks have such an edge.
So the Packers are 3-0 and averaging almost allowing 30 points a game.
Yes.
Yeah.
And to win, they've had to average 40.6 points a game.
Yeah, that's your example right there. I mean, like you said, I cover a lot of Raiders, and the Raiders are 2-1, but they've given up 90 points. They've scored 88, and if they don't keep scoring, they're not going to win any games.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have, and their two wins, they scored 34 each, and they're going to have to get over 30, I think, to win.
Yeah, and it's because, from as far back as we've been covering it, I mean, there's always that silly notion that ended back when Peyton Manning and Tom Brady took over that defense wins championships. And we knew that was outdated because then it's quarterbacks that win championships. Defense and running games can get you into the championship game, but it's the quarterbacks who win you the championships. And now, we're seeing a year that we've seen maybe occasionally. We saw it with New Orleans. We saw it with Indianapolis, where it's like, I mean, you can be giving up so many points and so many yards per game, but it's the quarterback that can get things right.
I've always described that theory. You have to have a great quarterback to have a shot. Now, there's been a few, variations from that, but you're in pretty good shape if you have an elite quarterback.
No question about it. And of course, you when you look at the Rams, I mean, and again, here's a Buffalo team that was at home, pretty good defense, right? Had the game 28-3, and the next thing the Rams take the lead, and then Josh Allen, who's now probably one of the most improved players in football this year, has to rally and get the victory right at the very end.
Yeah, great game, early contender for game of the year. I'm sure there'll be others. I kind of think the Rams are going to hang around for a while. I kind of like what they're doing.
Yeah, I do too, because again, I missed the boat on them early because, the first two games they came out of the box and they were much better on defense with a defense that, there's only four players I could even name, Aaron Donald, certainly Jalen Ramsey, Michael Brockers, Vic Rapp, of course, played up at University of Washington. I can't even name the other seven.
Yeah, and some of those linebackers are playing pretty well. There's work in progress. Brandon Staley, their defensive coordinator, he was a Vic Fangio protege. He's doing a pretty nice job as Wade Phillips' replacement. McFay's got the offense on point. I think the running game, the Rams are averaging something like 39 rushes a game through three games. And last year, they averaged 25. And there, you know, all these questions about the post-Todd Gurley Rams, well, they're running the ball more.
Well, it just
significantly.
It seems to me that Sean McVay was kind of struck negatively by that Super Bowl loss to the New England Patriots, and I think he kind of struggled all last year. Now, he, to me, the way he's calling games, he's even more top of the game. What's that?
At 32 years old, he'll be fine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because he's at the very top of his game right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a big believer in that guy. I really am. And if you look at the Rams' schedule, it's Giants at Washington, at 49ers, and then Chicago at home. So they can easily, you know, be 5-2 after going into November.
I tell you the other thing, because I know I did a little bit of this kind of grading the quarterbacks from the last four or five drafts. And, you know, I think as great a numbers as Dak Prescott has been putting up and as bad as Carson Wentz has been this year, I'm saying of that that draft, 216 drafted, you know, right now the edge goes to Jared Goff as far as who's playing the best this year of the three quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, he's well coached, like we talked about, and he's just solid. I don't think he's going to screw up too much. I think it means a lot to him. Not saying it doesn't mean a lot to the other guys you mentioned, but I think they're in pretty good shape with him. The Wentz thing is just another example how quarterbacks can just turn so quickly. We've seen that in the last 6, 7, 8 years. You know, guys are playing great, and then all of a sudden, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing that I think
is
so unique. Yeah, what's so unique is that, we watched it a couple times last year with when you don't have enough people to produce. Like, for example, I mean, all Aaron Rodgers had was, Jimmy Graham, who was not doing much, and Devontae Adams, who was about his only named receiver. And, you know, they didn't add to that. And yet now he comes out and Aaron's on a mission. He was averaging 40.6 points a game, which is incredible. But then you look at Carson Wentz. I mean, he didn't have much at wide receiver this last year, and then, you know, the receivers that he's had, I mean, Alshon Jeffries is hurt, Jalen Reagor is hurt, all those guys, and then they got four starters on the offensive line that are on injured reserve. I mean, they're cursed.
Right. Do you think the Rams GM, back, he'll never admit it, but maybe somewhere back of his head is a little embarrassed by picking, well, because, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is basically looking at him and smirking at him every week, you know. And if only that pick could have gone somewhere else, another receiver, help on the defense, which is badly needed. But clearly, Aaron Rodgers is still a quarterback who's going to be your quarterback for a while.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was overly critical. I mean, very critical of both Green Bay and Philadelphia, because this was considered to be the best second round draft we've seen in ages. You know, because the second round talent really went all the way, not only through the third round, for the beginning of the fourth round, for good players that you can get. And so to trade up to number one for Jordan Love, who was not going to play this year unless there's an injury, and then if you're, you know, taking Jalen Hurt in Philadelphia and taking away from a position player that you needed, I thought those were bad moves. And both teams right now are paying, well, Green Bay isn't because of Aaron Rodgers, but, you know, they could have got a wide receiver in Green Bay. They didn't do it. They could have got somebody in the secondary, but or on the defensive line, but I just kind of shake my head at those two moves.
Yeah, it's really those moves that on draft night when you're like, that's really weird. They usually stay weird, don't they? They usually become a bad deal.
No, I agree, because because what ends up happening is sometimes I think you overthink things, because first thing you knew happened, because Aaron Rodgers went through this with Brett Favre once they took Aaron Rodgers, and I still remember vividly, you know, calling Ted Thompson, the general manager, on Friday and telling him before the draft, I say, I'm telling you this right now, if Aaron Rodgers gets past the 9th pick in the draft, he's coming to you. And so it wasn't like intent that they took Aaron Rodgers and to irritate Brett Favre, but he then called a meeting with the staff, and they basically, because what happened from like 10 to 22 or so, there was nobody who was going to take a quarterback. And so here's a Hall of Famer falling to you with the 23rd, 24th pick.
Yeah, that was an amazing draft. For me, I was in Denver, and that was the Maurice Corrett draft by Mike Shanahan, the very last pick of the first day of the draft, which, you know, you think you're going to wrap up about 9 o'clock, and now you're writing about 1 o'clock. And that didn't work out so well either.
No, it really didn't. Let's switch gears and talk a little bit about the Raiders. It's like, again, winning the Carolina game I thought was pretty predictable. I mean, that was a great win that they had over New Orleans. Where do you kind of, and of course, you know, not a good performance last week, but where do you kind of put the Raiders right now?
Well, I mean, bottom line, they're 2-1. We talked about the defense. They're going to need good offensive play. The Raiders have a formula to win, and it's get the ball to Darren Waller a lot. Have Josh Jacobs run the ball down throats and eat clock. And that makes Derek Carr at his best because he's more comfortable. But when that's not working, Derek Carr has to try too much, and it doesn't quite work out that way. And then he gets fumbled. He gets sacked twice and loses fumbles twice, once in the end zone. They just, I mean, it's very predictable. If they can't get Waller and Jacobs going, and they usually do, they're going to struggle offensively. Mm-hmm. They have Buffalo at home this week, and then they play at Kansas City next week. Oof. And they really need to win one of these two games because they got the bye week after that. And I don't think nobody wants to be 2-3 at the bye after starting 2-0. I mean, is it the end of the world? Excuse me, no. But they really need to win one of these games against quality opponents.
Yeah, no doubt.
2-3-0 opponents.
Yeah, no doubt. That's the thing that I also find interesting. It seems like, how's the roller coaster ride with the relationship and evaluations of John Gruden on Derek Carr?
You know, there's always going to be speculation, and every year there's been speculation, heavy speculation. And it's very simple, maybe not a sexy answer, but if Derek Carr plays well this year, and he has in two games, in his own way, you know, efficient, he plays well this year, he'll be the quarterback next year. If not, if the Raiders don't make the playoffs and it's a big reason it's him, they'll get somebody else.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, but you can see there's pressure on him. How does Derek respond under the pressure?
I don't know. He's been taken because he's a very nice guy. He really is. A nice human being. This year he's been trying to act a little chippy on his shoulder and, you know, calling people out a little bit and saying he's sick of being tired of being disrespected. He said that twice, and he's getting a little chippy. And I don't know if that works for him. You know, I don't think that's his. I think he's uncomfortable doing that. So he should probably just be a nice guy and focus on his play.
Mm-hmm. Now I know the one thing that John Gruden was kind of skeptical of last year was the fact that in certain games, Derek just doesn't get the ball downfield. How's he doing stuff? It looks like he started out okay, but how is he on getting the ball downfield?
Well, you know, Henry Ruggs has been hurt for about half the season so far. And that first quarter against Carolina, they went deep to him twice and they hit on one. And so he hasn't been there. So it kind of takes a – they haven't been able to do their whole – offensive play where Tyrell Williams is out. But I don't know if Derek Carr is going to be an effective deep ball thrower on a regular basis anyway. I mean, that's why Darren Waller gets so many catches, because he's a bailout guy, you know? And Darren Waller is very good, but that's what Derek Carr likes. And, you know, a lot of people think that John Gruden's offense is a dink and dunk when you get down to it anyways. So, you know, I think a lot of the times Henry Ruggs is going to be – they want him to be Tyreek Hill, but if he could be a good decoy at times too, they'll be happy with that.
Does Derek still have that tendency to want to check down?
Yeah, I think so. I think we saw it a little bit against the Patriots. Hey, you know what, John? This is his seventh year. He's 29 years old. He is what he is.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he's going to get – you know, any worse other than age, of course. And I don't think he's going to get substantially better either. I think he is what he is. I think a lot of people I've heard compare him to Alex Smith, and I think that's in play style. You know, short passes, doesn't throw many interceptions, but leaves a lot of yardage and points on the field because he won't take many gambles. I get that, and that's a good comparison. He kind of reminds me, in the big picture, not necessarily play style, but the big picture of Andy Dalton.
Mm-hmm,
Second round pick, started for a long time, you know, was the face of the franchise for a while, and then just kind of it was what it was. He was probably average to a little average at his best, and that's what you're going to get.
Yeah, pretty interesting. Now, where are the Raiders on defense? How good is that defense?
Oh, it's bad. It's bad. Nobody's making plays. And, you know, they brought in Malik Collins, defensive tackle from Dallas, on a one-year deal. And Gruden, who, known to exaggerate, you know, saying he's the key to the defense. He's a monster. He has three tackles in two games. Has two tackles in three games. I know that's not end-all, be-all stat for defensive tackles, but he's not getting any penetration. He's not getting any not disruptive at all. Corey Littleton paid him $12 million a year for 3 years to be a starting linebacker. He had success with the Rams. Well, he doesn't have Aaron Donald in front of him anymore, and we're seeing that. He's just not getting nearly the tackles that he that – now, again, it's early, and like you said, defenses are at a – you know, disadvantage. But we don't see any playmakers on this defense yet.
Interesting. So how do you kind of size up the who's going to end up being the second best team in the AFC West?
Well, I think it's going to be the Raiders because, I mean, they're pretty banged up. But, you know, the Broncos are just toast.
Oh.
And Chargers, they just keep getting a new injury every week, a new substantial. Well, they got five starters on the IR. I think the Raiders will be, second place in the AFC West, and I can see them vying for a wild card spot because they're seven now. So I can see them getting to nine wins, but again, they got to stick to that formula on offense that works for them.
Yeah, no doubt. How much fun has it been, kind of working with and kind of following John Gruden?
Oh, he doesn't take himself too seriously. He's very, great quotes. Yeah, he's I've known him a little bit for a long time, and he's fun. It's never, ever dull.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on draft night, anything could happen, in free agency or if somebody comes up in a trade, like Antonio Brown. The Raiders are always going to be a possibility.
Interesting.
Cut down day is busy as hell, because he's doing stuff.
No question. So, and now, of course, the one story that came out this week, because there's videos of it, I don't know how many Raider players were caught at some function not wearing masks. And, I know the league and the Players Association are investigating it, but it would be a team decision if there's going to be any sanctions on any of the players. What do you see happening there?
I don't get the sense that there's anything going to be major. Maybe they got fined. Maybe they got warned. They talked to, Gruden, Mayock, and the training staff talked to the players. There's about 9 or 10 of them, including Derek Carr, Hunter Renfrow, Darren Waller. It was his event. Jason Witten. There's some key players there. They're photographed a lot and videotaped a lot without their mask. And there was nobody seemed to be wearing a mask in this public, event. Or a private event, but, there's a lot of folks there. So, Derek Carr and John Gruden were basically yesterday like, hey, this is kind of taken away from Darren Waller's foundation. He made a lot of money. We're sorry that it happened, but let's focus on the money made. It was pretty much the kind of the tone. Derek Carr said, I think we've done a fantastic job following guidelines. Well, I think some people wanted to see a little bit more apologetic. They're going to move on. But they can't. John Gruden got caught in week two. He's one of the five coaches. He's got a $100,000 fine. The Raiders got fined $250,000. And then they have this, and this is the kind of the first public, outing in the NFL during the season. So the Raiders guys got to be careful from here on out.
Okay, so Bill Williamson from the Bleacher Report, how can we follow you, and what other things do you have kind of coming up?
Actually, SB Nation.
Or SB Nation, I'm sorry. Yes, SB Nation. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I moved around a lot.
I know.
I'm very happy at SB Nation and been there for a while, and, yeah, it's going well. And Silver and Black Pride and Turf Show Times, those are the Raiders and Rams sites, and appreciate you having me, John.
Okay, Bill, hey, thank you so much. And that's Schooled with the Professor. And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with the Professor.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
Saving money when you start your next project today at Menards. Check out our great selection of garage and utility lighting options. In stock, ready to take home today. We carry everything to help you illuminate whatever project you're working on. Shop garage and utility lighting products in store at your nearest Menards. You can also view all of our entire selection of lighting options today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.